attitude that's rising up, the energy that's happening, and it all began this morning at sunrise with drumming and gongs and meditation, and it's just continued and continued throughout the morning, and wow, that's all I can say is wow, it's fabulous. The music is spectacular. For the past few weeks, we have talked a lot about overcoming. If you remember back to Dr. Gary's talks about hell in the hallway, being stuck in this place. When one door closes, another one opens, but we can be in that in-between time. Last week, we looked at the different facets of the Easter story and saw how we can use them in our own lives, how they can have meaning for us in our experiences that feel like crucifixions to us. Because the truth is, we all go through those things. We all have experienced loss or the death of a loved one, or illness, or divorce, or there's just a myriad of ways that can feel like crucifixion experiences, personal crucifixions. Do you all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Have you all had something you can relate to? And the scriptural account of Jesus rising up can give us hope as we go through these challenging times, that we can know that there's resurrection on the other side of it. You see, we can hold on to that. And so today we have two of our members who are going to tell us their stories of loss and resurrection, what spiritual tools they have used to help them finally roll away that stone and move beyond their crucifixion experience. And as you listen to both of their stories, I invite you to try to catch something that may be speaking to you. You know, what meaning can you take from this? Is there something they've used in their struggle that might be a lifeline for you in your time of loss? And so our first speaker this morning is Travis Melcher, who has been attending here since 2012. He usually attends the first service, so maybe he's not a familiar face to all of us, but he has been attending here since 2012, but he came here to preschool.
Lived with my mother and older brothers and saw my father on weekends. It was difficult growing up in a multicultural family and single-parent household, but my parents showed me the value of family at a very young age. Both parents were very involved with their extended families. My large extended family is still an important part of my life. But one thing about a large family is that you can experience a lot of loss, as I unfortunately did at a very young age, with the passing of my grandparents and the splitting of my family. In May of 2000, on Memorial Day weekend, I abruptly experienced the loss of my middle brother, Ryan. He was visiting my mother's boyfriend's cabin at the time, a place he had never been before. Ryan was supposed to be grabbing his camera to take pictures on the hike he was on with everyone, but ended up with a self-inflicted gunshot wound with the camera wrapped around his wrist. Left our family in shock, mirrored in grief, and questioned why for years to come. Then, on June 27, 2009, I was faced with the biggest challenge of my life. I got a phone call early in the morning from my mother's boyfriend to inform me that my mom was sick and had been taken to the hospital. I thought she would just bounce back. I made phone calls, giving updates to my partner. I called my eldest brother to come down to the hospital. Shortly after his arrival, we were sent to a private room in back where the doctors spoke to us with devastating news that my mom had a ruptured brain aneurysm with 0% chance of recovery. Time was critical, so we had to make the choice to operate on her or let her go. Knowing that she would have wanted, she pass away with family surrounding her later that day. Her death had a lot of controversy around it. 3 weeks previously, she had been falsely arrested at her home by the Spokane Police Department. She had done nothing wrong, and I believe that the stress of the abusiveness of that police altercation directly contributed to hypertension, leading to the ruptured brain aneurysm. I had to deal with this issue for a long time. There was never any resolution or consequences to the police force. It consumed my energy seeking justice, and I was filled with pain and anger. 10 months later, well, moving forward with a personal relationship, working full-time, and trying to get my life back on track, a third tragedy struck. In April of 2010, I got a call from a friend of my oldest brother, Jared, informing me that he passed away from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. In the same manner as my other brother, this Tuesday will be 7 years ago since he passed away. He struggled through the death of my mother and wasn't able to overcome the loss and devastation which happened 10 months earlier. The immediate family members I grew up with are all gone. And all the losses that I've experienced with my family, the worst part about it is I had no say. I didn't have the time to say goodbye or try to help. All the situations happened unexpectedly. You never get over the death of a loved one, but you can grow and survive with their strength and love. With spirit, love, and support from friends and family, I've been able to overcome the suicidal tendencies that struck my brothers. After the loss of my mother and brother, I made the decision to leave my job to focus on healing. It was the start of a transformation. I did have good things that happened in that time. I got married to a wonderful person who loved, cared, listened, pushed me to be better, and much more. The transformation started with my belief in my body, mind, and spirit. The first thing I did was work into physically changing my appearance by losing 40 pounds in 6 months. I noticed the result and felt it in my body. Unitarian Universalist Church, and then we decided to try out Unity. We attended a couple services at the end of 2012 with Claire Austin, senior minister, and David McClure, the associate minister at the time. We have been here ever since. One service that stuck with me was the first one in January of 2013. David spoke about Ho'oponopono, which is the ancient Hawaiian practice of reconciliation and forgiveness. There are 4 steps in the process. You have to do it wholeheartedly. I have used it firsthand. The steps are information to provide us. The lessons they talk about can be difficult to comprehend and implement, but it's like anything else. It takes time and practice. We all have these tools at our fingertips. It's just up to us to use them. Gary and Jane have taught some of the more recent practices I've been using. I've needed them even more so since the separation from my wife 8 months ago. The most impactful practices for me have been the 5 basic unity principles, the Q process, self-compassion, being vulnerable, and a few weeks ago, the 3 questions. I practice these every day. You just need to time to take the teachings into your mind, transfer them to your heart. To me, self-compassion is the opening of my heart, a feeling of warmth, light, strength, and care. I experience this by letting the love in my heart space expand and reach out of my chest. Then I enjoy sharing it with whoever or whatever is around me. You have to be vulnerable to have self-compassion. You need to know that mistakes happen. We are all human, and we learn. Once in your heart, you can feel the emotion, and with self-compassion, reflect on who and what you have come here to be. Let the emotion warm your heart, then transfer it back to your mind. Making heartfelt choices and decisions are much more impactful. I practice it every day. The more you do it, the easier it becomes. I've used the five unity principles. God is, I am good, I create, I pray and meditate, live it. I've had questions about these principles, but I know it's about how you live with what you create. As an example, I didn't create the death of my family and think it was inherently good. My part of creating the experience is reflected in how I respond to it. I've overcome a lot, and I have finally been able to get over the anger and bitterness. Now I create the view that justice won't be served for my mother, but I can speak about it and enlighten others. I know with the power of prayer, I can release the feelings from my heart. When I release those feelings, I'm living it. I have my family's courage and strength to be up here right now. The Q process has also helped me. I went through it last November. Anytime something triggers me, it is helpful to sit down and do a worksheet on it. Just to share a little bit with you, this is who I've come here to be. Inspirational, loving, kind, compassionate, fair, gracious, giving, caring, heartfelt, and much more. But I also ask that you please have compassion for me when I'm being self-centered, stuck in lack, insufficient, alone, not good enough, and devalued. Going through the Q process and using the unity principles have helped me with self-compassion and vulnerability. Being up here right now speaking about this is living the principles firsthand. Being vulnerable, sharing my thoughts and experiences that are most likely different from yours. Some of you may agree, and others may not. There are many things I would like to say about the support I received throughout my healing from my partner. I could write a bestseller with all the wonderful things I love about her. First, though, I need to learn better grammar, punctuation, and spelling. I feel lucky to have had a partner with the same values as me. We have been through more than anyone can imagine over the past years. It has challenged and tested us. We have become stronger and better because of it. Even though our relationship has changed, I feel only love and gratitude for her, and always will. I promise to be there for her through thick and thin. I don't take the vows lightly and live by them like unity principles and Q process. Just a few weeks ago, we learned that of the three questions, is it true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? I used the questions the day that Jane taught it while speaking to my partner. I was telling her I was going to speak in front of the congregation, and I didn't think I was influential or motivational. And she said, "Now that wasn't very kind, was it?" We both laughed, and it showed that we are trying to use the messages that are being taught. I asked myself three questions several times a day. We have special ministers that provide us guidance in how to use powerful tools that we all have. So let's start using them. To conclude, these tragedies were what you might call a crucifixion experiences. And I spent a lot of the time in the tomb. But I want to tell you that there is a way through into a resurrection experience. And that is a path through the heart. Thank you and happy Easter.
Thank you, Travis, for sharing your story and for inspiring us this morning. Oh, let's take a breath, shall we? Next, we're going to hear from Dave Terry, who's been a member here since 1979. He and his wife, Sue, were married here, and his son went to preschool. I don't know if he went with Travis or not, but they've had a lot of history here. Dave is here to share his story of loss and resurrection with us. So let's give a big, warm welcome to Dave.
Embrace crucifying loss with resurrecting hope. On July 22, 1965, a Buick Wildcat blasted down a solitary country road. Midnight's high full moon gleamed brightly behind us. Chicago's skyline faintly glowed 40 miles ahead. The summer night's sultry air slammed through opened windows, stinging our summer clothes skin and chilling our nerve to sit still and stay silent. We were blunted not by liquor or drugs, but by peer pressure in a situation new to all five teens' assumed invincibility. Unconstrained by any seatbelt, I leaned over my friend Sandra's lap to spy the speedometer soaring past 105 miles per hour. Why was he keeping the accelerator pinned down so long? We're going too fast. We're not speaking out. It's too late. I pleaded, "Bob, what are you doing?" "I want to see how fast we can go," he said. A ghastly image emerged from the murky gray landscape as the engine cranked up the 1/6 the speed of sound. A gigantic tree. Where in the hell did that come from? Why was the road pointing straight at a towering tree and an acres of corn? I could see no escape. In seconds, I'd die. My foot pressed down where was a brake pedal? I braced for the carnage. Locked tires screeched their rubber onto the asphalt below. I cringed, waiting to be knocked senseless and die. "We're going to miss the tree." Bob swerved to the left, finding a jog in the road, but then we skidded off the road at breakneck speed. Life blurred into a high-speed gauntlet of smashing, hurtling, dropping, and bouncing violently, seemingly unending cornstalks beating down our suicidal advance. Finally, silence. Were we dead? I felt nothing. I was numb. What was real anymore? Beyond the cracked windshield, condensing steam rose, unmasking moonbeams over the crumpled hood of our crushed vehicle. Moonlight glowed on multitudes of waist-high leaves of corn surrounding us, spurting out in all directions as far as I could see. Was this real? A dream? Or an afterlife? It was a real-life nightmare, moving from a cornfield to a hospital, with agonizing days and nights of only sleeping when I was drugged enough. I was the only one critically hurt. I dreamt someone was pounding my left heel on cement. I woke drenching wet. I was on fire from the inside out. Pain and fever were killing me. It was 3 a.m. I had spent 10 days lying in a sweat-soaked cast encasing my left leg, still unrepaired, and much of my body. A nurse took my temperature. 103.5 degrees. On an early August morning, I waited hours for daylight and any sign of hope. Were tiny bacteria going to do what a huge tree and a country road's guardrail had failed to do, kill me? A new doctor told me anaerobic bacteria were quickly poisoning my bloodstream. I was taken to surgery. Infected tissue had to be cut out, but I would get no anesthesia. Really? Damn, this was crazy. A nurse gave me cotton gauze pads to bite down on when I screamed. My eyes squeezed closed. At first, I felt nothing. Pieces of me were already dead from infection and had lost their nerve. Me too. Then the doctor cut a live nerve. Oh, my God. I clenched down the gauze so hard my jaw instantly ached and my eyes bulged in their sockets. I shrieked the air from my lungs as hard and as fast as I could, over and over, until the throbbing backed off to just horrible pain again. Only 18 years old, I soon dropped to 103 pounds. A surgeon's scalpel, 4 months, carved off dying flesh from my wasting body, severing nerves without anesthesia. Repeated anesthesia could also kill me. Agonizing between death or survival, clinging to a dying leg, I enslaved myself to unintended torture. Finally, I sought out a different hospital and a doctor to cut my leg off below the knee, 7 months after the car accident. Sucked down to my spiritual zero point, time after time, stripped of self-worth and hope, would I open to something to guide me better than just my personality? Feeling torn apart, I searched for wholeness. Dread started opening to greater wonder. Would I ever find normal again? Or could I strive for greater than normal? Could I forget grotesque, emotional, physical pain? Or could I choose to embrace all of life more? Ah, embrace everything. Open to a more wondrous appreciation of wholeness. Resurrect hope with qualities like awareness, forgiveness, trust, joy. Let these embrace crucifying loss, pain, mistakes, fear, problems that paralyze us with grief. Judging separates the bad problem from the good solutions. Instead, embrace them together to resolve problems. Love, wisdom, and grace have no function until they are needed to heal loss, fear, and other lacks in feeling whole. Strive not to end world's badness. Heal by giving my personal best. I continually choose from 3 approaches in how I live and how I impact others. See the movie Groundhog Day to really appreciate these approaches. Do I live the same day over and over? Because if my attitudes don't change, the calendar can, and I don't. It's just an illusion. The first approach lives passively, trying to avoid or ignore problems. Disinterested in wholeness, don't change. In the hospital, I tried to shut out pain and fear, watching lots of TV. Great painkiller. And we're still using it? Letting others control my fate. The second approach lives reactively, repeatedly performing the same actions, often escalating, to try to make problems go away by either fixing or getting rid of them. Force change. Reacting diminishes wholeness by dividing it into good and bad. In the hospital, I tried to get rid of all pain by controlling the staff to get my pain shots often. Pain was bad. So, any means to remove it was good? No. The irony in repeating actions is expecting different, better results. It never works. We hear this, but are we learning? It feeds the problem. More pain meds clouded managing my pain well. When staff reduced my addiction, I was angry. Until I found, by thinking clearly, I handled my pain better. Embracing pain with grace invites it to teach me how to heal, so I can teach others too. This third approach responsively asks and listens for how my talents and all my experiences creatively, compassionately uplift my world. be the change I want to see in my world, or no change in my actions, force the world to change to my lofty ideals to fix it. No, be the unconditional role model. In the hospital, I became a miracle by seeing Bob, the uninjured driver, my best friend, intertwined in my life, forgetting nothing, forgiving all, responding, not reacting to unfairness. Fairness is a myth. I would myth out embracing bitterness as poison without forgiving. My trusting forgiveness embraced my hurt, not just for Bob's mistake, but to forgive my forgetting. I re-remembered to rejoin a greater power than my personality to guide my blessing every response, honoring our indelible bond. How do I invite more responsiveness into my life? First, I see. That means smile, make eye contact, and express appreciation to as many people as possible every day. A kind look, remembering a name, it's worth the effort, by the way, or a sincere acknowledgement are simply each a great gift. Second, I write down experiences in my life and trust in asking to more fully relive these life moments so that I may discover meaningfully greater wholeness for all of us. This talk is one of those responsive processes. You can do this in the cue process or making a mind movie, embracing your perceived lacks with a greater appreciation for your wholeness that completes you. Just don't be too lax about it. After all, one lax is plenty, and X lax will get you moving for sure. Third, embrace even the bad, annoying, scary things with thank you. Thank you, David. Murphy's Law of Inconvenient, and he's not a scary thing, but he taught me thank you. Murphy's Law, I need to get her phone number so I know what Murphy's Law has in store for me next, of inconvenient consequences can remind us to embrace problems with whole solutions. The bigger the problem, the better. Sounds crazy, but it's true. Loss so great it threatens how I live feels crucifying until I appreciate my old way, avoid, stop, replace, loss, is a bucket bailing out the Titanic. It's kind of futile. Instead, love all that's around me better. That graces my living or drowning gloriously. Embrace survival with grace that opens to what's greater than fight or flight. Easter is not celebrating Christ fleeing or fighting his way out of the crucifixion. And yet we try to do it a lot, don't we? He showed us a way in. Embrace betrayal, sin, pain, and the cross with forgiveness, healing, wisdom, trust, and resurrecting wholeness, even in our dying, not just his. Am I learning to respond to horrifying loss? Better. With several job losses, especially two that felt like bitter divorces to my laid-off coworkers, I chose gratitude by embracing people more wounded than me. Applying for a job again at 65 without enough savings to live out full retirement, I still chose, instead of worrying, to embrace two laid-off employees with very little savings, helping their families pay thousands in medical bills. I valued this even though one was a total stranger and the other strongly disliked me. Strange how I get a laugh there. I never expected that. Giving with a glad heart spreads joy. By the way, that person talks to me now. But I didn't do it for that reason, and that's important. When I broke my left leg again, at age 33, and had no job, when I suffered leg sores in my 40s, almost ending my physical therapy career early, because I only started when I was 40 with a college degree finally working as a therapist. When I couldn't run for 27 years, regained it for 17 years, and now can only walk 1 to 2 blocks without pain, I've learned to say, okay, God, you've got my attention. Again. I listen and respond better and sooner, feeling so grateful that all of these seemingly horrible things can actually bless me. My personality would have never signed on to this up front. I would have missed so much amazing living if life had been easy. That's important to realize that. From more fully embracing loss, I have shared great attitudes, gratitudes like appreciation, trust, and joy with thousands of teens in our schools, tens of thousands of hospital patients needing more than just a physical therapist to show up in their room, and many more thousands of Bloomsday participants I cheer on nonstop for 4 hours for the past 7 Bloomsdays, ever since an inoperable blood clot ended my 25 years of walking or running the race. I give what I most cherish, celebrating our wholeness together. That's what we're doing right now. I will close with a poem inspired by a frustrating time at work that I turned into a humorously insightful alternative. I do this all the time. It's kind of fun. You'll kick the can from Kent. Does life at times just seem to suck? With rife disasters gone amok? Can strife reduce one to I'm stuck? Greed's knife craves carving others' luck. Can choosing lift one from this mess when losing sucks in such excess? Recusing all luck, try finesse. Refusing excess suck, success. Look up, you'll kick the can from Kant. Trust drops drool such as must or shan't. Forgive cruels, cruel self-talks turn to rant. Can fuel life's success. Can't. Trust past your grief to find soul's gist. Just picture lost to joys your tryst. Lust lecture not what bliss life's missed. Rust tincture not soul's bucket list. Don't kick the bucket, fill it full. Kick in your can, success, no bull. If you enjoyed this poem, feel encouraged to pick up a copy of 2 Easter poems outside the sanctuary doors. They're just in a basket to your left. One is, 'Twas the Night Before Easter. Should sound familiar. And the other one is one that I wanted to offer to David McClure when he was up here speaking just 3 years ago at Easter. Didn't realize what he was going through at the time, and the poem never got shared, but it was okay because I discovered my love for poetry. And so I thank you, David, because I've loved all of your insightful humor over the years. And it's part of what's caused me to want to write and be a poet now, too. My core affirmation in living is to be a powerfully positive, loving, lasting difference in people's lives. I hope that I've lived up to that purpose in being with you today. My life is better for your being part of this day. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave, for sharing your story. Very powerful stories we've heard this morning. So we've heard from Travis that applying spiritual principles to his life and using the tools that he has discovered have been his path. And what I really heard was that it's the path of the heart. Self-compassion is our greatest companion out of the hallway. Please hear this. Self-compassion is our companion out of the hallway. And Dave found his way through gratitude to serve and then to give the world what he needed. Did you hear that? Did you feel that? Powerful. So Jesus' story of the crucifixion, the resurrection, gives us hope because it reflects for us our own recovery from times of pain and suffering. Whatever challenge you may be facing right now, no matter how long you may have been in that hallway, this moment can be the pivotal one for you. Can you feel that? This moment, transformation is always possible. So I invite you to just consider what you've heard today and see if there is something that really stands out for you as what you can use in your pathway this Easter. And know that you are blessed so deeply, so richly. And have a great rest of your Easter. So it is.